Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, airfares are slightly down year over year, and we discuss some of the complications for travelers caused by the government shutdown and what you can do to avoid problems. Those stories next in the news.
When you check into a hotel, there's a half a dozen simple steps that you should take to increase your safety. We'll share the lists in our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22.
Each year, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra comes to town with a blow-your-Santa-socks-off Christmas show. We have details on this year's musical spectacular at 11:35.
Instead of renting an Airbnb vacation home, what if you could trade your home for someone else's, straight across? Sounds awesome, but is it possible? We have a guest at 11:40 who says it absolutely is.
For many years, a lot of people who have worked hard to get Sacramento recognition as a foodie city. Now we have shown up in the top 10 on a Wallet Hub list of food paradises. We have details at 11:50.
Our second show right here on our new home is packed with great travel information. Here to make you smarter when you travel, we are the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
We are Mark Hoffman and Sam Romano, the Travel Guys. Thanks so much for coming along. We've got a great show for you today, here to make you a smarter traveler. We once again want to thank all of the new listeners that may be here on Sactown Sports 1140. This is our second show on this particular frequency and are very pleased to be here. And as we mentioned last week, we introduced ourselves. Mark Hoffman is owner and president of Sports Leisure Vacations, takes people all over the world on a regular basis for well over 40 years, going on 50. And Mark, you do one something every year. In fact, you have a few of them. They're called mystery tours.
And you
have people that actually sign up for these, don't you?
we do. And we should also thank you for the nice introduction there. And the gentleman giving that introduction is Tom Romano, who is a longtime radio veteran in the Sacramento area. I bet you there are people around town saying, right now, listening to the program, saying, yeah, don't I know that name, Tom Romano? I've heard that voice somewhere. So Tom has been a broadcaster in the Sacramento area for many years. Yes, Tom, we are on a mystery tour, and we are in Pennsylvania. I can tell you this because we're out here several times a year. But people who travel Sports Leisure Vacations pay large sums of money to go on trips where they have absolutely no idea where they're going until they get there and what they're going to do and all that kind of jazz, which I'm sure to some people seems rather bizarre, don't you think?
Yes, but at the same time, it sounds very intriguing. I mean, think about the excitement. I mean, it's one thing going on a vacation, but it's another one having it be a complete mystery to you. That's got to be a special feeling.
Yeah, it takes a certain kind of person. You know, some people would never even consider such a thing. To people who are well-traveled and people who enjoy off-the-beaten-track, let's face it, a mystery tour is not likely to go to a New York Broadway show, but it wouldn't be out of the question if we found a way to bring it to you that we'd never done before. And so that's what mystery tours are about, going to destinations. For example, on this one, we're in Pennsylvania. We spent some time in and around the Scranton area, which probably some people would say, Scranton? Why would you go to Scranton? Well, exactly. That's one of the off-the-beaten-track type of places. Today, now we're over on the western side of Pennsylvania, and today we met a very famous groundhog in a little town called Punxsutawney. We met Punxsutawney Phil. And that was a tremendous amount of fun learning about the ground. They have a whole royalty of groundhog guys in Punxsutawney. And I mean, it's a pretty big deal to this little town. But anyhow, we're in Jimmy Stewart's hometown tonight. For those of you who remember the late actor Jimmy Stewart, here in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Tomorrow we're going to a Frank Lloyd Wright UNESCO heritage site. So it's all about fun and a little culture and learning things along the way. And that's part of what we do as a company. And indeed, the mystery tours are incredibly popular and generally taken among experienced sports leisure travelers.
Yeah, and you were going to tell me, where's your next mystery tour to?
Yeah. Every year we do one at Christmas. And so we actually did one 15 years ago in this little town we're staying in tonight, Indiana, Pennsylvania, because this is Jimmy Stewart's hometown. And, of course, at Christmas time, it becomes the It's a Wonderful Life town.
Cool.
And they decorate it all up, and it's, yeah, it looks just like the movie, only it's in color and the movie was in black and white. So anyhow, we're just hoping that we'll be able to get home Sunday. Air travel has suddenly become a little bit more of an adventure over the last 5-6 days, and we're all hoping that the air traffic controllers and TSA workers will continue to go to work without any guarantee of a paycheck. Hopefully they'll be paid when the government reopens, but you know, it just seems kind of, it's kind of too bad that people who have rents to pay and, you know, childcare and mortgages and car payments and groceries to buy and stuff like that. I mean, my daddy was an air traffic controller. I mean, they make pretty decent wages. It's not a king's ransom. The guy, people who work at TSA are, you know, don't make what air traffic controllers make, certainly. So these are people who really, really need a paycheck every 2 weeks. And I don't care what team you play for. It's up to the people in Washington, D.C. to work this out so that people, so that average people who are there, what happens if one day the air traffic controllers don't go to work? Then there will be no flights. I mean, that's the deal. If the TSA people don't show up, I mean, would you show up for a job after you hadn't been paid for a couple of weeks and you couldn't pay your rent and you're thinking, gee, you know, I could at least drive for DoorDash until they figure this out. So this is, you know, the other thing is you're probably going to wait in a little bit longer line in some airports and stuff in the meantime while they work all this out. Remember, the TSA people are not the people who went on strike. I mean, they're not the people who didn't figure this out and who shut down the government. It's not their fault. So you might just smile and say thank you, because, I mean, would you work if you didn't know when your paycheck was coming? Anyway, that's enough of that. But that's something I just needed to say.
There you go. And I just want to add that it's stressful enough to be an air traffic controller, working a lot of overtime hours and the stress of the job. You don't need the stress of having to worry about whether you're going to get a paycheck. All right. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. And at the top of every program, somewhere near there, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with today's edition of the Travel News, once again, Mr. Mark Hoffman.
So, good news is domestic airfares year over year have actually gone down slightly year over year. Airfares have dropped in 41 states. Orlando offers the cheapest domestic flights, and Jackson Hole Airport in Wyoming is the most expensive, they say. Hawaii has the lowest average domestic flight cost by state. Of course, domestic flights in Hawaii are inner island, and since Southwest moved over there, the inner island prices have come down considerably, so that's not too much of a surprise. But anyway, basically airfares are flat year over year, domestic airfares. International airfares, on the other hand, are up about 5%, but interestingly enough, the airlines are starting to see some drop in demand for domestic travel. Here's kind of an interesting item, especially if you happen to be a tour operator like Mark. Generation X shows strong preference for guided travel. Generation X, they're basically, this survey was talking about people in the age 50 to 65, which is a little younger than most people generally get into guided travel. But this says that 74% of those Generation X travelers find guided vacations appealing. Why do they find them appealing? Probably for the same reason that their parents, who are a little older than them, are taking guided vacations. They value the flexibility and freedom that is offered by some of the new modern guided travel, where people have more free time, and also the ease of logistics, so that, you know, you don't have to be the planner anymore. And if something goes wrong, somebody else is in charge. And some people are really attracted to that concept of things. Now you're seeing a lot more, especially for, you know, packages that are designed for younger people, are balancing attractions, scheduled attractions, with free time so that you can create your own, do your own thing. So anyways, a little bit of a generational shift there. U.S. travel has taken a $1.2 billion hit since the government shutdown started. As of Thursday afternoon, the U.S. has lost more than $1.2 billion in domestic travel spending, as a result of the government shutdown. That is money that's not being spent in restaurants, hotels, on airlines and the like. And of course, we already had we're seeing somewhat of a drop off on international travelers. So if domestic people stop traveling, some of these folks are going to find themselves hurting because, of course, in case you haven't noticed, if you're a traveler, travel costs have gone up dramatically post-COVID. And part of that has been driven by the fact that people who like upscale, let's say mid to upscale places to stay, places to eat, places to go, things to see when they go there, are willing to pay higher prices for more upscale accommodations, restaurants, et cetera. There appears to be some signs that that demand is lessening. So some of these places that are leaning heavily on that are going to find, I think, that it's going to be a little harder to raise prices for a while. That's good news for travelers. Due to the government shutdown, here comes from the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., in case you're headed that way, starting tomorrow, Sunday the 12th, along with most other Smithsonian museums, the Air and Space Museum is going to shut down. It has been open during the shutdown, basically with funds that have come from other places, but also the National Zoo was open. It will be shutting down on October the 12th. So if you're headed to Washington, D.C., and you were hoping to see some of these iconic attractions, if they are inside buildings, then you are going to have a hard time getting in, basically, at this point. Tom, I want to take a few minutes here, and we'll cut the news portion of the program just a little bit short. I wanted to talk about a lot of people who have airline tickets coming up in this next week or 10 days or 2 weeks, and they're wondering, you know, these spot shortages and closures and delays are popping up all over the country. Mm-hmm. They're kind of hard to predict, it looks like. So I thought maybe we should spend a few minutes on that. I mean, if you were flying right now, would you not be concerned that you would be able to get there and get back?
Oh, absolutely. And I'd be all ears to the travel guys to find out if there's any information that can help me out.
Well, we've had thousands and thousands of flights delayed. But the good news is that airports have not shut down. Most airlines, the completion rate, in other words, the flight getting in, whether it got in at 1 o'clock in the morning instead of 7 o'clock at night, but at least it got in, is really critical. So the completion rates are staying high. That means most flights are operating. The delays, it doesn't appear that you can really, they're jumping all over the place. Listen, air traffic controllers, we were short on them anyway. And have been. This has been something I've been in business for 40 plus years. This is something that's been talked about almost constantly during that entire time. It sort of makes you wonder why more attention hasn't been paid to this. I guess they try to hire these folks. These are not easy jobs to do. And there's a lot of stress involved. A lot of these guys now and ladies are working 10-hour shifts 6 days a week, which is, wouldn't be bad for a week or two. But or if you really wanted to do it and you didn't have a life outside of work, but what if you did have a family and stuff like that? And the boss was saying, you know, this is how you have to do it. So anyway, we've talked enough about that. Should you get to the airport earlier than you usually do, anticipating the fact that there could be, if too many TSA people call in sick at one airport, that could be a problem. Listen, Dale and Sid, who run the Sacramento operation, have told me that they don't see any indication so far that that's an issue. They're working really hard to try to help their employees in case paychecks don't come next week for those who, are going to need other sources of funds or loans or, maybe have to call in sick for a few days because they've got to work somewhere else. So in Sacramento, there are no signs of breakage so far. Do you need to get to the airport earlier than usual? No. But is this a time to cut the airport short and say, I know I can pull into the parking lot 45 minutes before the flight departs and get on the plane? I suggest to you that's a really bad idea right now, especially when you're returning to Sacramento and you're in an airport you're not familiar with. You don't know how long the lines are in the morning or the afternoon or the evening at TSA normally. So make sure that you're at the airport an hour and a half to 2 hours before flight time, especially now. Don't cut it that close. That's just really a critical thing. Also, another thing to remember is that airlines are responsible if situations happen that they can control. In other words, if they have a mechanical issue and you miss your connection and you're stuck in Denver or Houston or wherever overnight, in many cases, the airlines will accommodate you. They'll give you a meal voucher. They'll find you a hotel, provided that one is available. They'll take that expense. In these government shutdown situations, the airlines are not taking any responsibility. So realize that if you get out on the road and you miss, your flight doesn't go, or it's too late, you know you're going to miss your connection, so you don't fly, or you get to your connecting city and you can't get where you're going, don't expect the airline to jump up and say, hey, Mr. Smith, here's a hotel on us, or here's a $100 meal voucher, go and get dinner, because this is not their fault. So it would be wonderful if they jumped up and took and stepped into the breach, but that would cost them a tremendous amount of money. So it's understandable why they're not doing it. So just know that if something goes wrong, you're sort of on your own. And because these have been kind of wildcat-ish situations, and my guess is that if we get to next Wednesday and there are no government paychecks, that it's going to get a lot more interesting. So if I were you and I were headed out on the road and I took any kind of medication that I needed, I would make sure that I was traveling with 3 or 4 days extra medication. I mean, I don't think the world's going to come apart, but you could have small inconveniences. Take an extra change of clothes, you know, a couple pair of underwear or an extra pair of socks or something like that, just in case you're one of the people who gets out here and you don't get home exactly when you expect to. Does that all make some sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. Good advice, especially in these times. And, you know, the part about that this isn't the airlines or the airport's issue, and don't expect it, because even though they may act like government entities from time to time, they are not.
Well, and the other thing is that if you're flying in the next couple of weeks at the last minute and you haven't bought a ticket yet, seriously consider the possibility, if a nonstop is available to your destination, even if it's the airline you don't normally fly, particularly if it's an early in the day flight, then it's much less likely to be delayed. And of course, if you're nonstop, you don't have that extra situation with getting off and changing planes and your bags having to change planes and all of that kind of stuff. So if you can, you know, I'm not here to plug Southwest Airlines, but they do have nonstops to a lot of cities that are not served nonstop by other airlines. So, if you were flying to Kansas City and you're flying on American, you're going to have to connect. Why buy an American ticket under these circumstances right now? Why not buy the Southwest ticket and say, you know, now it's only half as much possibility that I could get delayed. And if I can take a morning flight and not have to make a midday connection, there's a much greater chance that I won't be stuck in some of these situations. I hate to tell people to carry their bags on the plane, but if you can carry your bag on the plane, remember that if there's short people in the control tower, or there's short people at the TSA counter, or there's short people anywhere else, you know, the airlines have had the issues before. So what if your bag doesn't make it? You know, you make it and your bag doesn't. Or what if you don't make it and your bag does? Your bag ends up on the other side of the country and you didn't make the flight. So now you're separated from it for a few days. So make sure you're carrying those essential things. That's good advice at any time, but right now it's especially good advice. A couple of other things I wanted to mention here. At national parks, we talked a little bit about Washington, D.C. Just figure that if it's an outside area, then it's probably open to the public, but that there are no restrooms, probably trash connection, etc. In some states, however, some states are providing, and I don't have an exact list, but go online, Google the park sites, the National Park Service sites that you're visiting, and you'll find out. Some of them are closed completely. We had a small one in Scranton that was closed. But some of them that you wouldn't expect to be open are open because local people are providing funding or paying people, or they've got a volunteer program, or maybe parts of, you know, maybe the gift shop isn't open, but they're cleaning the restrooms and stuff like that. So don't just go do your homework ahead of time. Don't just go someplace and hope that things are there. If you have a passport or visa in process, those are still running, but at a slower pace. Travelers are starting to report longer turnaround times. So, but not always. Some people are still getting their passports and visas quickly. So again, bad advice right now would be to wait a long time to go get those things. Good advice would be to get off your hind end and get them done as quickly as possible. Federal museums and historic sites, Many of them are either closed or have their hours shortened. So again, this is a time when a smart traveler does their homework and checks on the places within a couple of days of arrival. And of course, if the government opens back up, then all bets are pretty much off on all of this stuff. And that is sort of your travel news for today.
Thank you, Mark. By the way, this is Mark Hoffman. I'm Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Let me ask you, how much to spend on your last fast food order? Yeah, really?
How much did I spend?
Yeah, how much? Yeah. Well, you know what? Instead of just eating, how about dining out instead? Rudy's Hideaway Lobster House, the place in Sacramento for fresh seafood and hand-cut steak since 1970, has a new special this month, Prime Rib and Scampi. Mm. Featuring their delicious herb-crusted, slow-roasted, choice aged prime rib, large shrimp scampi sautéed with garlic, white wine, and capers. Love those capers. And your dinner also includes warm sourdough, San Francisco French bread, fresh asparagus, and baked potato. All of that for, make a guess, $75.95? No. $59.95? No. $36.95? Yes. Just think about it. Thinking about it, it's not even lunchtime yet, and I'm ready to go. Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House, easy to find, right off of Highway 50 in Hazel in Rancho Cordova. All right, some safety tips. Safety tips having to do when you go into a hotel. We'll have those for you next here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget, check us out at travelguysradio.com. Lots of tips there to make you a smarter traveler and an opportunity for you to reach back out at us if there's something you need. All right, Mark, let's talk about safety in hotel rooms. What do you got up your sleeve? I always put a chair up against the doorknob myself.
Oh, Jesus, my paranoid friend. Listen, there are some things, some easy, simple things to do when you go to hotels that will really... the chair against the door thing, the gentleman who wrote this, I kind of made fun of you there, but the gentleman who wrote this article for Travelers United that I'm referencing today puts a doorstop that has an alarm on it against the back of his door.
I never heard
so that
of
if
such
the door
thing.
Opens, if the door opens and there's pressure on that doorstop, then somebody has figured out how to get into his room, then it immediately starts beeping. And he says it's loud enough that other people on the floor will know that something is wrong. So I'm not quite that paranoid, but I will tell you that when it comes to getting into your room, into your hotel room, the first thing you do when you close the door is to turn the deadbolt on. And if there is a chain or any other protection up there that you can move that will make it harder to open the door on you, that's the first thing that you do. The first thing that you do is to secure the door. If you have other things that you do to secure the door besides that, I'm going to suggest to you somebody has the wrong key. A housekeeper thinks they can get into your room with a pass key or something like that. You've got that deadbolt on and the inside protection on. Nobody's coming into your room. That's just not going to happen. Other people have, lots of things they do, disinfectant things and stuff like that. I'm not quite that paranoid. I will suggest you a few other things, though. Ground floor rooms, especially if you're a lady traveling alone, a ground floor room is just easier to get for bad people to get into. So they don't have to use an elevator. They could just get access to the hotel. Obviously, there might be access from the outside. So avoid ground floor rooms. Also, hotels that use that require you to use your room key to get into the elevator. In other words, you get in the elevator and you push a floor number, the elevator won't go anywhere unless you activate it by putting your room key up against the pad, and now it allows you to select your room floor. That's a real huge security thing because nobody can get into the elevator unless they dogleg with somebody else. It's hard for people to get into the elevator without having a room key. So that gives you a big extra protection. When you get into the elevator, I know it's a pain in the rear end to have to get your key out and knock it on the pad in order to get to your room, but that's one way to do it. Another thing is when you're checking into the hotel and you walk up and you say, "Hi, I'm Mark Hoffman checking in. That's way more information than you need to give. I'm Mr. Hoffman." Don't give your entire full name, because if someone is within earshot, then you're giving them the start of the information that they need to be able to get into your room or to get a key. Some hotels, unfortunately, will give out keys to people with minimal types of ID or, you know, where they really shouldn't be. So you've got to protect yourself a little bit against situations like that, where somebody who really isn't authorized may try to get a key to your room. So when you're checking in or you're going down to the front desk, don't give out publicly, loudly, all of the details that are needed to know what room that you're in, because that's just bad policy. That's not being paranoid. One last thing here that's on my simple list is use the do not disturb sign to reduce the number of people that go in and out of your room. If you're somebody who doesn't need housekeeping every day, or even if you know the hotel doesn't provide it every day, put that do not disturb sign out anyway. That gives anybody who might be trying to get into your room to do something bad, it gives them a second thought. Gee, there may be somebody already in the room. Maybe I should pick somewhere else. Remember, in some cases, you're trying not to be the easiest target. So when you're at home, when you're traveling, whatever, but especially when you're traveling, you know, nobody flashes big bills out of their wallet or stuff like that. So when you get into a hotel, be smart. You know, don't be giving out a bunch of information that you don't have to give out. And hopefully that will make you a smarter traveler.
Romano here, room 528. I'm going to probably lose my key. So, okay, don't do that. No. All right, we're Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys. Coming up, Al Petrelli with the TSO joins us. And then we're going to talk about house swapping. That's next here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. A link to our special guest today can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Our special guest is Susan Ruckdeschel, author of a new memoir, Wanderlust, Anywhere But Here. The Anywhere But Here part really strikes a chord with me. It's a true story of how she transformed a turbulent childhood into a life of adventure and reinvention. You know, it's a little bit about the book, but in the book and in the little bio that she sent us, she talks about something called home exchange. Really kind of sounded interesting. I think a lot of people have heard of that. We know a little bit about Airbnb. Susan, thank you for joining us here with the Travel Guys.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, Susan, tell us, folks who are listening, you know Airbnb and VRBO, you know, where mm-hmm. you can rent a yep. vacation home. In some cases, mm-hmm. it may actually be someone's home that they're renting. In mm-hmm. an increasing number of cases, it is a property that's been bought by a real estate speculator and furnished expressly for the purpose of having it be a vacation rental, and may not have, you know, when Airbnb started, Tom, mm-hmm. it kind of had a personal feeling. You were going into somebody's home.
Sure.
And yeah. in many cases, you had made consciously that decision to do something like that. Mm-hmm. So, Susan, it mm-hmm. sounds to me like home exchange is kind of a back to the grassroots version of Airbnb, where people really did rent someone's home. But in this case, yours has a little bit of a twist to it. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Sure, a bit of a twist. We home exchangers like to call it a club, because in order, like Airbnb, you didn't have to own your own home. You could float from one Airbnb to another. And I remember the early days and the ads, you know, they had a guy, a gentleman or a woman serving their guests breakfast, you know, which isn't the case anymore. But home exchange, you have to own an asset to be able to trade for another asset. So you have to already be a homeowner. And you have to prove that and get verified in the system. And then you showcase your home. And there's no money exchange other than a cleaning fee, which seems to be more popular now. In the early days, we just agreed to clean it as it was when we took it up. But now I see that they're charging cleaning fees, and that's fair. Nobody complains about it. And so you can trade a direct trade where I'm going to stay at your house and you'll stay at my house at the same time. And my first one was like that. I stayed at a woman's home in France and she stayed with her. Actually, she stayed with her daughter. That's right. But about a month later, she then came and stayed at my home because I had a home with my partner at the time and it had lots of rooms. It was like a little Airbnb, or it was actually a bed and breakfast. So anyway, you could do a direct trade or you can do a non-simultaneous trade where I'll stay at your house at some point in the future, but you can stay at my house now. And you can have the whole house or they can have a portion of their house. Some people have a little cottage or a casita, or they have an extra room with a private bath, or maybe not with a private bath, you know, something maybe similar to couch surfing.
So, Susan, you said something that kind of caught my ear there back a little ways. You said no money is exchanged. So if you have a, you know, you have a rather large home, let's say, and someone else has, you mentioned, a cottage. So it what you all are doing is you're valuing each person's home on the same basis as everybody's home is equal. Is that kind of sort of what I'm getting here?
Yeah, it is. The homes can be completely different, but you don't care. You just want to visit an area and you're happy to be in a home and not have to pay money for it.
Yeah, it's not as if you're visiting the home. It's the area that the home exists in is what I think what people would be after with a home exchange, particularly if home exchanges are, let's say, I want to exchange my house here in Sacramento, which is near Lake Tahoe in San Francisco, for somebody that might have a home in Italy.
Exactly. Yes. And as a tourist, you aren't going to be in that home very much other than to sleep and maybe eat. So, I mean, you want it clean. And I've never stayed in one that was not clean.
This carries an extra kind of connotation to it that Airbnb doesn't, because when you do an Airbnb, even if you're staying in someone's home, they're not coming to stay in your home. I mean, that would be a one in a million sort of thing.
Yeah.
But in this case, the system is specifically set up here with home exchange is that that's the whole purpose of the whole thing, is that I'm staying in your home, you're staying in mine, we're going to do right by each other, because after all, I don't want to stick it to you, because I want to have a good time at your place, I want you to have a good time at my place. And you describe this as sort of a club. Is there a membership or something, or is it just kind of an unwritten group?
You do pay a membership fee. It's not much. It's usually $200 or $300.
Got it. Okay, our special guest today is Dr. Susan Ruckdeschel. We're talking about home exchange. You know, for our listeners, if you would, Susan, give us an example of a place that you did an exchange for. What was it like? And so that people can kind of like visualize someone actually doing this.
Look, I would like to tell you about my very first exchange. I wanted to go to the south of France, and I found a place in south of France, but not exactly where I wanted it to be. But once I did some research, it was Montpellier. I wanted to be in Nice, France, or Monaco, somewhere around there. But I researched Montpellier. I thought, oh, this looks good to me, and it's a free stay, and I'll take it. So I was really scared because it was the first time I'd ever done it. Is this a real person? Am I going to get hijacked? And I was with my partner. It was the two of us. And we showed up, and there she was. And she was there to greet us and show us around the home and point out the little quirks and give us her direct communication information. You can communicate on the app or, you know, by WhatsApp on their personal phone. And that was it. And she turned the home over to us, and it was just lovely. And again, we weren't really there much other than to sleep and maybe have some wine at night and dine. We were out touring Montpellier, and I stayed there for a week. It was just lovely.
A very different situation, it sounds to me like, than the more business-like Airbnb, VRBO things. Home exchange is the name of what Susan's talking about here, homeexchange.com. We will put a link at travelguysradio.com. Susan, thank you so much for for joining us today. This sounds like something that would be kind of fun and maybe for somebody who's looking for something just a little bit more personal.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it.
Thank you so much, Susan, for joining us. Let's see here. What's up next? Looks like Tom, strike up the band.
The sound of the music in the background, it must be that time of the year. No, not the time for the TSO, Trans-Siberian Orchestra program and show, but our annual interview with the lead guitar player and musical inspiration and director of the band, Al Petrelli. Al, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
It's so good to be back, my friend. How you been?
Good, good. How's the year been treating you?
It was fantastic. They just, you know, they go by faster every year, which is a little scary, but it's been a great year, so I have nothing to complain about other than I just wanted to slow down a little bit.
I want to tell folks right off the top that the TSO is back, obviously. The date of this year in Sacramento is Friday, November the 28th at the Golden One. Going to be two shows at 3 and 7:30. And let's start off, Al, and tell the folks what the program is all about. I see the words in bold caps, all new show. Tell me about it.
Well, we've been talking for many, many years, and I hope I've never disappointed you by saying, like, this year's show is going to be better than previous ones. And we're going to present The Ghost of Christmas Eve in its entirety again for the first time in a while. And that's become a real favorite of a lot of people, especially in your community. You know, it's weird because, you know, when we made the film back in 99, I didn't, you know, I knew it was fun and it was a great story and it was just a pleasure to do, but I didn't know it was become as important to families as Charlie Brown's Christmas, you know, is to me when I was a kid. You know, this is going to be part of people's, like, holiday go-to film. And year after year after year, they've enjoyed it. And now we're going to bring it back live with a much bigger production than we had last year. And last year was pretty big. The front of the show will be different. The second half of the show, we're going to do some things we've never done before. One being celebrate the 25th anniversary of the release of Beethoven's Last Night. So we're going to do a couple select songs from that work that we've never done in the winter tour. And, you know, production will be bigger. The look of the show is going to be a lot different than in years past. We have a couple really cool things in mind. And I just hope that, you know, the folks I consider my repeat offenders, the one who comes every year, they go, wow, they outdid themselves again. Because if I don't hear that, I'll be kind of heartbroken and disappointed. But I think we're in good shape.
Well, it's amazing how many people have come to the program and still how many have not. And for those that that have never been to a TSO show, I love the way you can frame it, if you will, what folks can expect to see and hear.
Well, the easier approach to that, if you don't mind, is like, whatever you think it is, nah, you're not even close, you know? So you got people who say, oh, it's the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, thinking they're going to, you know, be listening to a Shostakovich presentation all night. Not happening, really. Partly, yes, but mostly no. If you think it's a rock and roll concert, partly correct, but mostly no. If you think it's a theatrical presentation like a Broadway show, again, part of it, but not all of it. It's all that and so much more rolled into one, and it's an experience, excuse me, shared by so many tens of thousands of people over the years in your community. That realize that, you know, we're kind of all in the same boat when it comes to Paul O'Neill stories. We all can understand the message because we've been part of that message or we've experienced that message. And you walk out of there saying, well, I'm not alone in my feelings. I'm not alone in my sorrow or my jubilance. You know, everybody kind of gets the point in the show. And it's very accessible and it's absolutely not ordinary in any way. And if you've never been there, please come join us. You know, I bet the farm that you're going to really enjoy yourself. And multi-generationally, you know, bring your grandkids, bring your grandparents, don't care, just bring them.
We're talking with Al Petrelli with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra coming to Sacramento on Friday, November 28th. I want to ask you, Al, a few off the wall questions. First of all, you know, folks have heard you on our program for many years, and we talk about how that you guys travel by bus. Do you travel exclusively by bus from city to city?
I'm going to say 95% of the time, yes. Most of the time, I'll fly to Omaha, Nebraska, and that's the first of two flights that I'll take, the first show and the last show. And the rest of the time, I enjoy my time on the bus. You finish the show, you have a beer, get on the bus, a bite to eat, and crawl in my bunk and go to sleep. And uninterrupted sleep for 10 hours.
Yeah, there's got to be times when you stop off at a particular location on the road between this city and that city or in a particular city, and you say, well, we got to stop and we got to go to X, X marks the spot. Yeah. What is it?
For me, Chicago Deep Dish. You know, Lumonati's. Absolutely. You know,
Al, I have to ask you, this is a question that someone said, hey, when you talk to Al, asking about his favorite fan experience, you know, a fan, an autograph situation, one that really sticks out in your mind that is, you know, that has carried you along in the years or maybe even recently, your most unusual fan experience.
Well, my favorite experience with was with a young man. And if I'm not mistaken, it was in after the show in Sacramento years ago. And I was walking back to the bus, and this young kid, he's had to be 13, 14 years old. His name is Andrew Goymer. And he came up to me, and he said, hey, man, can I get an autograph? I'm like, absolutely. And we started chatting for a minute. And he said, you know, I'm a guitar player, and, you know, my dream is to one day be in a band like yours or with you. And I said, dude, you know, here's my email. You know, send me videos, keep in contact, anything I could do to help. Well, anyway, he grew up to be an incredible guitar player who's, you know, kind of in the periphery of our bullpen as far as up-and-coming guitar players. I mean, the kid's just amazing, you know, and we've corresponded for the better part of 12, 13 years now. And, you know, gave him a couple lessons, gave him a couple pointers, and I've watched him grow up from a teenager to, like, you know, he's going to be somebody to reckon with in the not-so-distant future.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, one of these days we'll be talking about him on the program as he becomes...
Or hopefully talking with him.
Right, right.
He's
that
amazing.
That would even be cooler. Al Petrelli with the TSO. Al, final question before we let you go. What's your favorite Christmas song?
This Christmas by Donny Hathaway.
That's great.
Followed by Vince Guaraldi's Christmas Time from the Charlie Brown Christmas cartoon. Something about those two pieces of music. One's very sad, but, you know, promising at the end. And the other one just makes me smile no matter what.
That's great. Okay, last opportunity before we turn you loose to invite all the Sacramentans, all the travel and entertainment guys and folks, gals and guys to your program coming to Sacramento.
Listen, that community has been so amazing to us for decades now. If you've never seen the show, please come out and see what everybody's talking about. And this is the first time since COVID where we'll have meet and greets and get to thank you personally for all your support over these years. It's going to be a wonderful year, and I can't wait.
All right. Once again, folks, Al Petrelli with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra coming to Sacramento November 28th. Two shows. Don't miss it. Coming up next, we're going to talk to our friends at Wallet Hub about how Sacramento ranks as a foodie city. I think you'll be surprised at how well we do. That's next here on The Travel Guys. Hey there, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Don't forget, links to our special guests today and always at TravelGuysRadio.com. Welcome back, Chip Lupo with Wallet Hub. We have the folks from Wallet Hub on the with us from time to time, particularly when something about Sacramento pops up. Welcome to the Travel Guys, Chip.
Oh, good to be with you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Let's start off by talking about the methodology that went into this study that talks about places and across the country that are good places to eat, that are affordable. And we see that Sacramento has actually showed up on this list. So how did you go about coming up with your data?
Well, guys, essentially what we did is that we evaluated the 150 most populated U.S. cities across two key dimensions, affordability and diversity, accessibility, and quality. We then applied 28 relevant metrics, and those run from everything from the cost of groceries, affordability, accessibility of high-quality restaurants, food festivals, per capita, those types of things. And crunched the numbers, ranked them 1 to 150, and Sacramento cracked the top 10 at number 9.
Yeah, we should probably, just for our listeners, I will post the whole list at TravelGuysRadio.com, so if you're a technology wonk, why you can go and see all the numbers and all the rankings, but I will quickly give you the top 10 here. Miami is first, Portland, San Francisco, Seattle. I couldn't argue with any of those. Orlando is fifth, which is kind of interesting. My guess is that there's a wide variety of places to eat in Orlando because of the wide variety of international visitors they draw. Austin, Texas is sixth, then Tampa, then Las Vegas. That's, once again, pretty obvious. Sacramento is ninth and San Diego is 10th. So, Chip, as we talked a little bit before we went on the air, Sacramento has worked for a long time. A lot of people around this city have worked for a long time to try to create. I mean, Tom, all the way back to Randy Perugary, and for a long time, people have worked to try to make this a place that would be recognized for its culinary attributes. And it appears as though that is finally starting to happen.
It certainly has. You know, recently they had the big dining experience right there on the bridge, where hundreds of people were served a meal. It was put on by many, many restaurants in the area. We are seriously a food-to-fork haven here in Sacramento, Chip, if you've never been. And so I'm not surprised. It's well-deserved, don't you think, Mark?
I do. A lot of stuff is grown around here. And so obviously agriculture and the like. Chip, what more can you tell us about how the study was put together?
Well, that was pretty much the gist of it, but we can break down some individual metrics here. But I did want to point out real quickly that Sacramento, number nine, one of three California cities that cracked the top 10, each representing the different areas of the state. You have Southern California, you have the Bay Area, and then you have north of the Bay Area. So California seems to be very well covered. Now, in terms of some of the metrics that we broke down, we can get into some of the areas in which Sacramento did well. A prevalence of affordable restaurants, in fact, number one overall in that respect, with ratings of at least four and a half plus stars. But as you were mentioning before, Sacramento is making an effort to become a really prevalent food city, and mission accomplished in a lot of areas in our what we call diversity, accessibility, and quality metric. Sacramento was number one in number of food trucks per square root of, you know, per capita, number one there. And one thing you mentioned a second ago, Tom, is about the big festival there. Now, that's a key driver in a lot of these food studies, because you can have restaurants, but you want to be able to create a food type environment. And Sacramento ranks number one. And Sacramento also ranks number one in the number of international grocery stores per capita. And you were mentioning before about the growing ethnicity. So that's definitely a reflection of that. So you've got high numbers of international grocery stores, food festivals, and food trucks. I mean, what could be better than that?
Great information, Skip. Thanks for help shining a light on Sacramento's food scene. Once again, Chip Lupo with Wallet Hub. Thanks for joining us here with the Travel Guys.
Thank you, guys. Again, appreciate you having me on.
Pretty impressive, Mark, and also rather satisfying to know that Sacramento has such great selection of affordable places to eat, and that we're now ranked in the top 10. And I think we're on a rise. I think we'll even move higher as years go by.
Yep, I believe you are correct. And I believe there are probably a lot of people. It's not the first time Sacramento has cracked a top 10 list, but just the fact that it's happening more often and that people are acknowledging the diversity of the different types of foods that are available here, you know, as opposed to it just being one specialty of this, that, or whatever. Good Lord, you could walk around downtown in a six-block neighborhood. You can come up with about 10 or 12 different ideas. Hey, before we go here, I have a really cute story about this is a story about these three Australian nuns. And you could argue whether or not this is a travel story, but we'll argue that later. These three nuns were sent away to a nursing home. They're all in their 80s, 81, 86, and 88. And they went away to the nursing home. This is in Salzburg, Austria. And they weren't very happy there. They wanted to go back to their convent. So they basically busted out of the nursing home and went back to the convent. Well, the convent had been closed. There was no running water. There was no electricity. But the nuns refused to leave. So people started bringing them food and water and substance, and so they just stayed, and the diocese tried to get them out of there, and the nuns just refused to leave. So a couple of weeks ago, they released a statement the diocese did, saying he feared the nuns are overestimating themselves and a medical emergency could occur. So I'm just saying, you know, good for the nuns. I mean, they decided that they weren't quite done yet. And that's, by golly, that's at least half the battle. So I'm rooting for the nuns from here on in. That's just all I have to say.
You know, why does that not sound like, or definitely sound like a movie? I don't know, maybe starring Whoopi Goldberg or something.
Yeah, Sister Act 2027, that would be fun. Yeah.
There you go. All right, my friends, thanks for coming along. We'll be back next week with a whole list of more stuff to make you a smarter traveler, Mark.
Absolutely. Remember to dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock right here on Sactown Sports 1140.